But all of a sudden, I hear this very clear voice saying to me, do you want to live or die? And I immediately knew, I get chills still talking about it. I immediately knew what it was asking because I had discovered that when I had breast cancer. I knew that the reason I had breast cancer, I got the cancer developed, was because I hadn't properly processed the loss. But you start to learn, whoa, earthquake. That's an earthquake.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today I have Dr. Laura Berman. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, I gotta give, so for you listening, watching, Dr. Laura Berman, if you haven't heard of her, which if you loved Oprah, I don't know how, at this point, have you not heard of her? If you like sex, relationships, let's go. She's a world-renowned sex, love, and relationship therapist. She's got two master's degrees and a PhD from New York University, NYU. And she spent 30 years devoted in her career helping others learn to love and be loved better from a mind, body, and spiritual perspective. So you've been a columnist at USA Today, New York Times bestselling author, 9 books, just nine.
Just nine.
I just wrote one and I'm like, how do people do it? And an award-winning syndicated radio host. So I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you.
You know, we have been hanging out in each other's orbits.
Yeah.
But not hanging out.
No.
Which, like, we might as well do that.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. I'm so happy to hang out with you because we've been circling each other.
Exactly. And, you know, the way that you speak about relationships and love, I think, is something that is refreshing for people in that there's the applicable part of it. And there's also the recognition that there's something beyond the technical, the strategy, although I would suppose on some level, getting in alignment with your thoughts, your feelings,
absolutely,
your actions is strategic.
It's both.
Yeah.
It's all of it.
So where do we start?
Well, okay. So I think what you're getting at is that, you know, certainly over the past 5 to 10 years, I have been adding elements to my work in the world that are much more metaphysical but still scientific, because I'm a scientist at heart. So for most of my career, and for most of the therapists and coaches I know, we work in what I refer to as the logistical field, which is what you're referring to, how you communicate your needs.
What is a boundary?
Yeah, getting clear on your boundaries, communicating your needs, learning each other's language of love, conflict resolution, you know, all of those things, which are crucial and necessary. But there is another level that I discovered by accident in my own journey that is on the 5D or quantum level, right? So there's the logistical.
Like how we do it in the biological.
And then there's the quantum realm.
Yeah.
And we can get into that, right? How do you want to do this? Do you want to get into quantum love or do you want me to tell you how it started?
Let's find out how it started.
Okay.
Because like, how does, if it can't be measured, it doesn't exist, become it is not measurable and tis does exist.
Well, it's not measurable yet because we don't have all the tools and technology to measure it in action. But here's how it started for me. 20 something years, had this amazing career, in the logistical field of sex, love, and relationships. And then my mother died, which was my worst, most horrible loss at the time that I could ever imagine. She was my person. And she died of breast cancer that had metastasized. And instead of grieving, I spiritually bypassed. I was filming a television show for the new network at the time. I had a 5-day-a-week syndicated radio show and I just...
Damn, you must have been busy.
I was busy and 3 little kids.
Oh,
So I was busy, 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 and I didn't have time to grieve. And so I just kept hopping and moving and shaking and didn't deal. And that felt great because I didn't have to feel my pain.
What was your bypassing like?
She's, you know, in a spiritual realm, we can have a relationship. I'll get to it eventually. You know, I don't have time to think about that. A well-meaning somatic friend of mine who does somatic experiencing, which I had barely touched at that point, taught me the containment technique where you put your feelings in a container because I was needing to go on set.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
And I was like, you're in survival. And
yeah,
I can't function. So she taught me how to contain and put it aside. But the idea of that is that you need to make a date to open it up.
Yeah, it's not like what we all do with our shadows, which we didn't know we were containing. Right. Like, what's that box over there?
Yeah, I'm not going to open that. Yeah, it's not there. So that's what I did. I was like, okay, I'm not keeping any of these appointments. It's working. I don't have to deal with it. I'm too busy to deal with it. And within a year of my mother dying, I think I was 40 years old. Within a year of her dying, I had no risk factors, no genetic risk factors. I had breast cancer. In the same breast that she had breast cancer.
At that point, could you like put that, were you like, this
is kind of fucked? It took me a while, but I had to completely stop my life because not only was it breast cancer, it was it had developed within the past 9 months because I had had a...
Holy moly.
And it was really aggressive, called, it was a HER2 positive cancer. Now they have treatments for that right around the time that I got it, but a year or two prior, I would be dead. So it's a really aggressive form of breast cancer. And it had infiltrated the milk duct. It was like this whole thing. So I had to have a mastectomy, chemo, and Herceptin, which is what you take for HER2 positive. So I went bald. I lost my lefty.
Lefty.
She's lefty. Lefty went bye-bye. Righty got lifted to match lefty.
Yeah.
But it was on chemo and three little kids and everything falling apart. And I had to completely stop my life.
So everything that you didn't stop for your grief, you now had to stop.
I had no choice.
Were you grieving now too? Like was
once
you, were
I got into it, once I finally stopped and I started really going into the downward spiral, which we all need to do and we can get into that.
Yeah.
I had to surrender because I had no choice. And then it all started getting clear. But it was a little bit of a journey. And at the same time, I mean, my husband was an amazing concierge. He kept him. He's great at that kind of stuff. He was keeping it all together and so supportive. Our three kids, they were like in third, fourth, and ninth grade. And they all started losing it.
Wow.
And one was having panic attacks. One was starting to refuse to go to school. And the oldest one became suicidal. And so I went to all my usual things from my, you know, recovering place of therapists and medication and school counselors and, you know, the things that your average mother working in the living in the logistical world would do, right?
Right.
And nothing was working. And so out of desperation, because that's the mother of invention, I went to a medium psychic for the first time in like since I was like in college. And I went there specifically. I had to triage. I went there specifically for the oldest, because obviously if you're suicidal, you know,
that's
number one priority, right?
Priority wound is getting treated.
Yes.
That makes sense.
And so I'm sitting there with her. Her name is Therese Rowley. She's become a dear friend and teacher of mine. And she said, okay, let me go into his field. I was like, what the hell's going on? All right. You know, he's at school right now. You're going to go in his field.
Like
okay.
The sports field at the school.
And she's like, let me go. She goes, oh, he's clairsentient, which I had never heard before.
No.
Which is basically, you know, when you're clairsentient, it's like when you're clairvoyant, you see things. When you're clairaudient, you hear things. When you're clairsentient, it's kind of the equivalent of an empath. You feel what other people feel. But sometimes, especially in children, she explained to me, and sometimes in adults, but especially kids, they feel what other people are feeling, but they don't know the difference between your feelings and theirs. Mm. So I had just taken him for neuropsych testing, and I thought the woman was crazy because she told me she felt like he was somewhere on the spectrum. And I said, why do you say that? And she said, because I was smiling at him and saying, how am I feeling? And he said, sad.
Oh.
But it was not because he thinks a smile means sad. He was feeling what she was feeling. So in that case,
he was like calling out her bullshit.
Yeah, basically. But he also, so he would do that, but then he would also take on the energy of the whole world and not know it. And then he'd come up with a reason why he was upset or sad or angry
to
or whatever.
Match like these,
yeah. And then he'd come up and it didn't make any sense. And she said he's like an ungrounded electrical cord, just whipping around, matching everyone. And she said, here's what you do. And she explained to me this technique that, and you have to understand, this was a ninth grader who already is more intelligent than I am. He's a total science geek. And he, and he's a teenager. So everything I say and do is stupid. So she told me to give him, she didn't call it this, but he eventually named it the grounding hug, which he still asks for. But she said, first she said, and this was the big aha moment. She said, so you have to be really careful about your mood when you go into the room with him. And I was like, well, it's not like if I'm in a bad mood, I show it to him. If I'm upset, I show him a calm face. And she's like, no, you have to internally, energetically be calm. And she showed me how, she showed me how to move. And this will revolutionize your parenting. I'm telling you, I want to write a book called Quantum Parenting, but
I just bought the domain.
But she,
make sure you buy it before this goes live.
But she basically taught me how, what I later learned, how to move my body into coherence, which is when the electromagnetic field of your brain and your heart move into alignment. It's what I call home frequency. It's our natural flow zone. And you can move yourself into that state, which is what I teach in what ultimately became Quantum Love. But this was just the very beginning. So she shows me how to do that, basically. And then she says, and then once you do that, give him a hug and just imagine roots of a tree. You're a tree with deep, deep roots, and you're sending love from your heart into his. So when he came home that day, I was like, I have something. I thought he was going to scoff. You know, I was like, I met this woman. She said she thinks you're clairsentient, which means that you feel feelings that other people are feeling and you don't know you're feeling them. And then you have to make up a story about what you're feeling. And he's like, I don't know why I'm saying this, but I think what you're saying is true. Like, he tried it on for a minute and then he said that. I was like, okay, well, let me try this with you. She said to do this kind of hug. And I didn't go into detail about what it was. And this angry, depressed, you know, teenager just melts in my arms and softens and calm down immediately. And I didn't say anything lest I seem invested in something, because then he would project it. But
my 11-month old, I can't wait for that.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
So a week later, he came back to me and he said, you know, I was at my locker today and I was in a really good mood. And all of a sudden I got really angry and depressed. And then I looked up and I saw another kid a few lockers down and I thought, oh, they must be angry and depressed. And then that was the turning point.
That he was now putting a space between what he felt and where it was coming from.
Mm-hmm. And it would be many, many years. He's still unpacking these superpowers he has and how to operate in the world with them, because he's a really sensitive kid. But it totally changed everything. And then I was like, what the hell is happening here? Like, because I wasn't in this realm at all. I was living in the logistical world up until this point. And so I here I am. Now at home, recovering from cancer, not able to do anything. And so I start reading, and I went down the rabbit hole into quantum physics because I needed to understand. And then I started applying.
That's where it begins.
Yep. And then I started applying the techniques to my other kids who were struggling, to get them to go to sleep, to get them to calm down without words, just changing my energetic frequency and letting them entrain to me, which is what happens in quantum physics, is that we're all
in train.
Yeah. So basically, we seem like we're solid beings on solid chairs sitting across from each other. But if we had a giant atomic microscope looking at us on the atomic level, at the level of atoms, all of this is blended together. We're not solid.
Right.
We're pure vibrating energy. Yeah. The chair is vibrating at a slower, lower frequency than our bodies, right? But our bodies, it turns out, are like human tuning forks. So everybody who's listening now or watching now, and you and I and everyone in who's aware of us, we are all vibrating in a harmonic frequency, or we wouldn't be able to perceive each other. So the only
That's
thing
right.
we can perceive with our five senses are people, objects, things, circumstances that vibrate in harmony with what our body's vibration is. And our body's vibration is in a range, but it's constantly changing, like an old-fashioned radio dial, the station and the volume, right? So it's, and we match each other. We're like human tuning forks. So when we come in a room together, this didn't happen because I'm holding the frequency and you're in training to me, whether you know it or not.
I like it.
But
I was going to say something weird's happening.
But normally what happens, this is the secret to quantum love. Everybody matches you. But normally what happens is we're all kind of finding the common denominator and matching each other. That's entrainment. And our children, the more time when you spend a lot of time or you're very emotionally invested in someone like a partner or your children with you and you with your children, you are quantum entangled.
Yeah.
So when two atoms are entangled, they're going at exactly the same frequency and speed and angle. And if I took one and sent it to the moon and spun it the other way, this one simultaneously would spin the
Isn't
other way.
Wild?
It's crazy.
I think that's so cool. And it's like what we were saying earlier, that there are not the technologies to measure.
No.
So then we just throw it in the garbage.
Yeah.
Like it must not exist then. It hasn't been validated.
Right.
And there's also, I mean, science, this is a long rabbit hole we don't need to go down, but science has really become so much of a religion.
Yes.
That there's like a tribalism to it that, and I'm not invalidating, science is amazing. There's been tremendous things discovered from it, but it has had us, so we have just said the mystical then doesn't make sense, so it doesn't exist.
So it doesn't exist.
And that's such a sad thing because, you know, even what you're saying about how we can interact with people and shift other states, which on a biological level, we'd say like co-regulating.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
That's
or mirror
what you're
neurons.
Doing. Yes. But it's also happening on an energetic level. And that's what I love about the co-regulation parenting movement right now. When I was raising my kids, it was about teaching them how to regulate. Co-regulation is literally quantum love in action. You're just not aware that that's what you're doing.
Call it whatever the marketers
call
need.
Call it whatever they need. But it, you know, the closest science has been at the Heart Math Institute, where they've been able to show the electromagnetic field of the heart goes up to four. They can measure it up to 4 feet. It's much further
through
than
walls
that.
Too, right?
Yeah, I mean it's crazy. All the it will blow your mind. It doesn't work with our understanding in our 3D world. But I will say this. So, and this kind of might open your not your mind, but anyone listening, is that we take in 40 billion bits of information every millisecond into our brains. And we only consciously process 2,000 of those 40 billion bits.
Damn.
So there's a whole universe happening beyond our conscious awareness. And the things that are happening on the quantum atomic level are obviously invisible. But what I discovered, and I was a doubting Thomas, I was like, what the hell, you know, but when I started discovering what this was all about, I started playing with it first with my kids and then eventually with my husband. And then I was like, okay, I got to figure out how this works and start teaching couples. And then I did that and I created a system and that became quantum love.
Yeah, because you also, I remember hearing you in another podcast talking about how you have a meditation on your website.
Mm-hmm. Lots of them,
That allows people to enter
that home frequency zone. And also it's the secret behind the secret of manifesting.
Right.
If you want to manifest something, it's not enough to write yourself a check for $100 million, you know, $1 million, or look in the mirror and be like, you're beautiful, right? Like you can do that. But if you don't move your body into the energetic frequency that matches that, that's the secret behind the secret.
Yeah.
That's what actually makes it work. And it works that way in love as well. So like, if I want my family to do something and they're not wanting to, I mean, I use it for good, not evil, but it is a Jedi mind trick.
My wife's all of a sudden like, I really related to something you said, which I think will correlate in that podcast I listened to, which I'm just thinking like all of a sudden Kylie will be like, you just seem right a lot lately. I have so much admiration for your constant rightness. That, again, the using it for manipulation, because I was actually relating how you said when you were younger, you were a master gaslighter.
Oh, I was so good at it.
Oh my fuck. I was like listening to you and I'm like, I was so fucking good because I was in sales and I loved manipulating people to buy stuff.
I was that way just because that was how I survived my family. And I was a therapist. So I understand all of your...
Yeah.
You know, like I can read people's, you know, I can read people's shadows or like what maybe, you know, and any boyfriend or whoever I was involved with, the higher stakes relationship was the only place I would use it. Cause I'm in recovery for 10 years now, 15 years, but I was a severe codependent. So I would, by the time you could be mad at me for something I legitimately did, But by the end of the conversation, you'd be apologizing
to
me.
That was me. I remember I had a girlfriend, God bless her, I'm sorry. But she would say to me, so I came to you with a challenge and somehow I feel like it's my fault. And I'm just going to apologize if this has ever happened to you and I did it to you. I'm so sorry. But I was like, well, I can't. That's how you feel.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I for sure
you
implanted the Jedi
up shit.
So now I think about getting into that quantum state that you're talking about, which I did take these skills of getting people to change and turn them into a superpower instead of avoiding people seeing me or like being seen or being not enough.
Yeah.
It was like, how do I actually use this to connect and help people instead of get them to do what I want them to do?
Exactly.
Yeah, because getting into that state of quantum, like love, that vibrational frequency, which I think it's like as soon as you use words like that, people are like, oh, here we go. Here's the woo. And I'm like, listen, if the 3D ain't working, just try some woo on.
I mean, okay, so I'll give you the example of when I discovered this with my husband. The reason, ironically, because I've seen and heard enough of what you write and speak about to know that you feel the same way, that our partner is going to trigger all our deepest wounds. That's part of the reason we're in relationship.
God bless them, eh?
And they're our greatest teacher. And we are attracted to people who are going to trigger our shit, whether we know it or not. We don't know it most of the time. Yeah,
till we know.
Until we know. Much
before
later.
That, you're like, why is this happening?
Yeah. And so my husband, the reason I was aware of this, even though I don't know why I was so attracted to it, because I felt safe manipulating, but it was I wasn't really conscious that I was manipulating, but there was something about this quality in him that I was really severely attracted to. And it was that I could not manipulate him. I cannot manipulate him to save my life.
My wife, too.
I can pull out every stop and he is not having it.
Same.
And I was like,
I love
it.
That's
so kind of sexy.
It's so hot. There's like a vibe to that.
Yes. And after 20 years, he still makes my uterus contract in part because of that. Like he's so clear, such clear boundaries.
He makes my uterus contract.
He does.
She makes, you know, I go from 6 to midnight.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean I have orgasms every time I see him, but I'm, you know, there's that.
It'd be hard to operate life if
that
was happening.
It would be fun, but I wouldn't be able to function. So anyway, he's extremely pragmatic. He's the opposite of the woo. And I can't win an argument with him to save my life. Like, no matter what. This guy is not a lawyer, but he could argue in the Supreme Court. He is like brilliant. And so we were in some argument during this time and he was upset with me about something. I don't even remember what it was, but I noticed because I'd been studying this and practicing it with the kids. And I noticed, I'm, you know, doing that thing where I listen to respond, right? I'm waiting to hear what he says so that
I do that.
I can have the comeback. And I stopped myself and said, all right, why don't you try this that you've been already practicing? And so I moved into this zone where I thought about and moved my body into the energy matching that thought, which I teach you to do in quantum love, where I was connecting with how much I love him and how this argument is just like a minuscule blip on the screen of our day, much less our relationship. And I, you know, I was listening like I would normally do, but instead of thinking about how I was going to respond, I moved myself into that zone energetically. And this man who never loses his train of thought, lost his train of thought and just kind of slowed down and stopped and his shoulders dropped. He was pacing back and forth. I remember on our back deck, because that's what he does when he's upset. And he sat down next to me and I put my head on his shoulder and like the whole thing just disappeared. I mean, we still had a conversation, but it was a totally different conversation. And I was like, whoa.
While you were in it, I just got to know, was the like part of you where you're like, oh my God.
For sure. And the part of, and the shadow of me who was like, I can't manipulate that. But now.
Right.
You know, but no, I do use it a lot, but only to get him to show up how I want him to. If he's not, most of the time he does on his own. But like if he's going through a period where he's really stressed or worried about something, he can get grumpy and kind of distracted and cold. not intentionally, but just
that's, I can get like, if I'm like overly overwhelmed, I can just have anxiety. Like, I'm thinking about things, worrying about things.
Yeah.
And Kyle will be like, you know, and again, like the 3D language of co-regulating.
Yes.
You know, if that's what we got to call it.
No, let's call it co-regulating.
I remember learning about the science of luck.
Yeah.
And there's like a great book called The Luck Factor. And there's an article written on it. Anyone can look it up. And it's like, they took unlucky people and studied what they did because of course they would volunteer for that. Right. Like, let's just prove how the world doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then they studied lucky people and they taught the unlucky people what lucky people did and they became lucky. And I thought this is so interesting because this is really just the science, quote unquote, of manifesting.
Yes.
It's like you start to optimistically see the world. You start to look for opportunity. You're working with your quote unquote confirmation bias. You're starting to, you know, direct your attention where your attention goes, your energy flows. Like these principles, when we give them a different label in the linear, all of a sudden they feel safe.
Yeah. And not woo woo or whatever. But this is what, you know, is quantum physics. It's basically, Einstein called this spooky action at a distance.
Is that what he called it?
Yeah. Because he was like, it was toward the end of his career. And he was like, holy crap, like this is blowing up all, you know, this is, I can't make sense of this. This defies the physics as I understand it.
Like there's no math for this.
Yeah. And he's like, this is spooky action at a distance because you can impact someone. So now, you know, when I walk into a room or I'm about to do an interview or I'm about to give a talk, I just do it automatically. I now just, my body knows how to move into the energetic frequency of a certain kind of zone that I like to be in. You know, I'm what I call the quantum love map. There's all of this research. And I get into it in the book, but each it's basically our body's energetic frequency is set by our thoughts, conscious and unconscious, and our feelings. And so, and the brain and the body don't know the difference between reality and rehearsal. So if like when they've done studies where they have someone practicing the piano on a piano and someone imagining practicing the piano, like a chord or something, they will have the same improvement.
I remember reading that about someone doing like thinking about doing reps, bicep curls.
Yeah, same thing.
And they actually end up with a strength increase.
Yes, because if you put yourself in, it has to be in first person present. But if you imagine in your mind a scenario, so like with my husband, I would imagine him, I don't know, doing something. Or most recently, I wanted all the kids and my husband to go skiing with me in a low, you know, just at Big Bear nearby, and no one was into it. And I was like, I really want to go skiing as a family. We don't do anything as a family. And instead of nagging about it or bugging them or making them do something they didn't really want to do that they pout about, I spent some time in first person present as if it was happening right here, right now, seeing us in, you know, what I really was envisioning, which was symbolic of the feeling I wanted to feel, because everything we want starts with how we want to feel. Anything we want is because we want to feel a certain way, right? And so I envisioned us at the, you know, the cafeteria on the top of the mountain, laughing and rosy-cheeked and cold and having hot chocolate and skiing together and the feeling of peace and aliveness and connection inside me, and let my body move into like as if it's happening right here, right now. And then I anchor that feeling and then I'm just like walking around and intermittently going back to that energy. Within 24 hours, my oldest said, hey, let's go to Big Bear. And then it happened.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it always works that way with them.
I'm curious for, it sounds to me like before we're conscious of actually directing our energetics like this, our vibration, we tend to match, like you were saying, we like kind of meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Or we match someone else's.
If we're codependent, vibration. We match everybody else's.
Yeah. So, I mean, our new book, that's so good because it's so correlated to my wife and I's new book, which I know we're going to talk to you
about
which
that.
I'm excited, called Liberated Love. And it's really about like how to heal those codependent patterns. And I love what you said, that it's like, that's an automatic dedicated match. So you're like automatically like, in order to be safe, I got to match yours. Because if you're good, I'm good.
Yes.
Yeah. That's so good.
And you don't hold your own.
Right. You don't have an own.
No.
Yeah. And so, by practicing this, you then become the tuning fork that other people start to radiate towards.
Yes.
So what does it look like in the 3D, like in our relationships, when we start to develop this race, this elevation, this ascension. And then, you know, let's say our original codependent blueprint is with mom or with like a sibling or with a partner. What is it like? What can people expect?
Yeah, well, one of two things will happen. So first of all, you don't have to worry about what will happen. You just do it. And I can promise things are going to get better. I can't promise there won't be moments of bumpiness, but they are going to get better because one of two things are going to happen. Either your partner is going to rise to your vibration, which they very, 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 I would say the majority of the time do. I would have never thought. I mean, my husband, we're married almost 21 years now, and I have changed. There's very little of me that resembles the woman that he married. Energetically, emotionally. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure physically too, but I'm talking about the non-physical. I've changed the rules. I've changed the dynamics. I've changed myself so much. And he keeps rising. I keep thinking there's no way he's going to be able to hang with this new version of me. I'm like, there's no way. I hope he can, but like, I'm prepared. Yeah. I'm so committed to this growth that I'm prepared. And then he rises to the occasion. And I see this in so many people I work with. So more often than not, your partner will rise and match you. Now, as they're doing that, stuff comes up. And that's part of what's happening on the planet right now. The electromagnetic field of the Earth, this happened right before NASA reported on it, spiked and has remained that way. And Mother Nature doesn't entrain to us. We always entrain to her. So all of a sudden, we went from as a community, as people, we went from living on this frequency to being pulled up to this frequency. And when in order to rise or raise your frequency, you have to face some shit.
That makes sense. I mean, we got to shake a lot of shit out that's going on.
Right.
There's a lot of old systems, old ways of relating.
Yeah. And people are like freaking out, facing their shadows, which is what happens, because the only way you can raise your frequency on a permanent level is to face the wounds that keep you in scarcity and fear and guilt and shame.
Right, right. Which, like, low vibration, quote unquote. But like how that looks in the 3D is not handling conflict well, having no boundaries, not keep maintaining your own energy.
Yeah.
Or as Terry Cole would say, taking care of your own side of the street.
Yes.
That's your frequency.
Yes.
Take care of your goddamn frequency.
And so
do you hear me?
That's true. So everybody is in that state right now. Now, in your relationship, what will happen is you're not going to go from here to here, right? You're slowly raising your own frequency, or you're raising it in relation to moments with your partner. So eventually your whole baseline will move up. But and if you can live in those higher frequencies anywhere from curiosity and optimism up to bliss, if you can hold that 51% of the time, your entire universe will change for the better.
Sounds like David Hawkins too. Like
it is the, map of consciousness.
Yeah.
I use him a lot in the book. What happens in relationship is your partner will continually match you there and continue to rise with you, or they won't be able to, but you will be in such a higher frequency place that at a certain point it will be like a no-brainer. You know, like you feel whole and confident in leaving the relationship, you know? And for some of us, the pain of being in a dysfunctional relationship where one or both partners aren't willing to rise and do the work to rise, the pain of being in that is, you know, the fear of it, of leaving it, is not as great as the pain of being in
it. Like the recognition of the awareness of what you're actually now having to, you're conscious to the suffering.
Yes.
Of staying.
Yes.
And the thought
and
of leaving
is
actually liberating.
Yes.
Even though challenging, of course.
And you can't imagine that right now.
Yeah.
As you start this journey. But that's what I see. And I've done this with thousands of people time and time again.
100% aligned.
Either they
on that.
Rise and meet you, or it is so abundantly clear. It's. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's an easy decision.
Like you
to leave.
See it. Well, that's the beauty of inviting someone to expansion is, how can you not say yes to it?
Yeah.
And if you can't, that's fine. That's your journey.
Right.
But now that the individual has said yes to it, they can't now not.
Yeah.
You know, so like the other person seemingly has a choice.
Yes.
But yourself, you don't anymore because you've tasted it.
Yes.
You've tasted, and Ram Dass talks about like, when you kind of go back and forth, you know, he talks about how, like, when you wake up and you realize that, you know, you're this being with all these patterns, da, 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 and then you want to go bowling, but bowling isn't bowling anymore.
Yeah. Nothing is the same anymore.
Right. And he said, but then you try to go back, you get a sports car, you do whatever, and you'll do pretty good, but you can never go back to sleep. And
yes,
I think a lot about, like, in our book where we talk about liberated love, which I'm so excited for you to read because of your perspective.
Yeah.
We talk about, like, one of the aspects of liberated love is, one, the honoring of the other being's path as being their path.
Mm-hmm.
And that love is about aligning that if it is.
Yes.
But also this fierce dedication to the truth.
Yes.
And
yes,
I'm like, man, that's what I want. Because it's ironic that in the world today, we have all these words like misinformation and disinformation, mm-hmm, which often the people saying that are the people spreading.
Yes.
The irony, right? So it's like this idea that we're going to control truth. We're going to control, right, narratives. We're going to control.
Or we're going to control someone else's growth.
Yeah.
You know, you, yeah, can't. And it's in the 3D realm and the logistical field. It's, you know, this is one of the coolest things for me as a clinician who works with couples is my entire career before Quantum Love. You know, if I'm doing couples therapy with you and one of you doesn't want to come in, which is often the case, I'm doing all I can remotely and eventually maybe trying to get that person in. And if I can get them in, get them to stay. But
right,
it's like, and at a certain point, if your partner is unwilling to be curious, open to growth or address the issues, mm-hmm, you're stuck. And then you have to get to that point where the pain of being stuck is greater than your fear of leaving it. But what I discovered with Quantum Love is I can change the whole relationship with one person. So I mean, it's great when you can both come in, but I just need one person and they start changing in these energetic ways. I don't mean they get a new haircut or say, I'm no longer making dinner. I mean, that may happen, but I mean, like, internally, they basically entrain their partner to them.
Huh.
And it's magic what starts to happen.
Yeah, I would imagine there's that sense of you're so aligned with yourself and feeling so good that you're actually now letting, because you're doing it personally anyway, so you're letting what doesn't align fall away.
Yeah. And you don't even, you're just holding that energy. Your partner then just automatically matches you. And your kids, like, I couldn't get my little one to go to sleep during that phase I was talking about. Hours. You've been through those phases, I'm sure, with your little one where they are sick or something's going on.
Oh, yeah, that's the hardest.
And you're just like, ready to pull your hair out, and you're so tired.
I've got less. That's what happened to my hair.
And you're so tired and you don't know how you're going to do another minute of this, and you're feeling frustrated and you're just waiting. And then they finally fall asleep and you move 1 millimeter and they wake up, you know, like that.
They're allowed to sit, but you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
I find that one. He lays on me and I'm like, why don't you lay on me laying?
Yeah.
You have to lay on me standing.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? I need to do some quantum grounding.
I'm telling you, I started doing this at that point, because my middle one, my youngest, was having panic attacks, and he would get so scared, had such separation anxiety, that I just started moving my body into the energetic frequency of peaceful, sleepy, held, loved, protected, moved my body into that energy, didn't change anything I said or did with him. And he would just go right to sleep. Try it. I'm telling you. Tell me how it works. It really works.
It sounds amazing.
Kids especially. Talk about in training, they're like immediately.
Well, especially because they can't. I think it's till they're, 2 years? They can't self-regulate yet.
No.
They're like learning regulation through co-regulation.
Yeah.
But so many of us, because of the world we live in, are not self-regulated. So, like, we have this template of attachment and regulation and quantum, you know, vibration that is not allowing for them to even experience that.
Yeah.
And we can blame all the confounding factors and all the things, but at the end of the day, it is still our responsibility. You know, I think about that as a parent, like, mm-hmm, there's even this next level of responsibility I have for personal work.
Oh,
one was the love for my wife, the love for myself. But now it's actually like, I can't leave any.
Yeah, the stakes are much higher.
Yeah. And, you know, I get it. Some people have overwhelmed lives. The world's overwhelming. I was actually going to ask you, do you think that, what did you say your son has sent? What did you call it?
Clairsentience. Yeah.
Do you think that young people have clairsentience at a higher volume today?
Yes.
Yeah, because part of me feels like I have that.
You do.
Yeah, like I've always had that.
Yeah, me too.
But I was told I was too sensitive.
Me too.
And now that I have learned how to be with it, not allow other people, you know, like protected
boundaries. Yeah.
But I was actually thinking about how you said, you know, there's this internal sensation of chaos that is, needs to be pathologized in their mind, like to be organized.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this from? Mm-hmm. It must be X, Y, Z.
Yeah, doesn't even occur to them.
And then we got social media, which of course, I think probably, let's get started. I think is probably even, like we're talking billions and billions more of dark bites
mm-hmm.
coming in. Like we didn't know about a war in a different country. I mean, there was always conflicts going on all the time.
I know,
but now
we have no idea.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was good for us.
And not only do we know, but we're being fed in our own echo chamber, our own opinion again and again and again.
Right.
I mean, it's just like the algorithm puts us in an echo chamber. It's just crazy.
They're using that same quantum technique, but in the dark.
In the darkness. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, again, it's so fascinating how the 3D biological is like, oh, stay on the cycle of this. Oh my God, I want more of this.
Yes.
Because we haven't like brought ourselves, we haven't gotten in charge of our own frequency and then recognized this is actually pulling my frequency.
We're in training to that. Each scroll, you're in training to those images and that energy, which is why people are going so cuckoo, because they're in training to the chaos and the rage and the fear and the anger. That doesn't mean you can empathize. You know, sympathize and empathize without joining, which is exactly what you have to do as a parent, right? Your kid is having a temper tantrum
without becoming.
Yes, you empathize with them. You can understand what they're going through. You express to them the compassion. You help them co-regulate, but you are not joining them in the chaos.
Yeah, like we still need an adult.
Yes,
and that's actually this. It might be a controversial thought. It likely is.
Go ahead.
But I'm like, where are the adults in all these conversations? Like I'm looking at the conversation about gender, which I have so much compassion mm-hmm. for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, where are the adults?
Yeah.
Like, hey, there's reasons that parents have the choice between what they have to guide a child. And I'm not saying that these things don't exist. None of what I'm saying is that. What I'm saying is that there is a reality that when someone tells you they're confused about something, that you're able to hold an anchor, a fulcrum, a reference point that like actually, no, or we're curious about that. Let's explore that. Not you're right. You're a kid. I don't want you to experience any discomfort.
Right.
And again, I'm not invalidating when it's real. I'm just saying that there needs to be resistance. That's the adult.
Yeah. Or just a container of before, because what I see the whole trajectory and you know, you're in the beginning of your parenting journey. Well, I can't say I'm at the end because you're always a parent, but my youngest just left for college and it's so different now. I was an extremely conscious parent for my time. You know, I was way ahead of the times, but I wasn't nearly as evolved as what we understand now. But it's been interesting for me to watch what's happening, because what I see is that it's not just not having an adult in the room. It's that our this generation of parents, you know, and even my, you know, my generation of parents, we are parenting, trying to parent in the opposite, you know, against our wounds, our childhood wounds. So for my age group, and I, you know, I think probably for yours too, not that you're that much younger than me, but our kids are younger, you know, different ages.
I'm the old dad.
Yeah.
So you were a young mom.
I was a young mom.
I'm an old dad.
Yeah, that's why. But I was... you know, we're helicopter parents, soothing, you know, not letting our kids feel any discomfort and learn to co-regulate or self-regulate or whatever that is. We're helicoptering, avoid, you know.
Don't suffer. Don't suffer.
We suffered so much and nobody cared. You know, it felt that way. And most of our parents didn't. We were just left to our own devices.
Yeah, be seen, not heard.
Yeah. And so that caused so much pain. We said, I'm never going to do that to my child.
I don't want my child to experience what I felt.
And so the pendulum swings to the other direction and we take away any kind of, you know, our kids have to learn not only that there's suffering and disappointment and unfairness in the world, but how to hold that in a way that doesn't take away their worth and their ability to regulate and their ability to stay.
Well, they need it.
Yeah. I mean, how are they going to operate in the world if they don't have it?
All opposing views, you don't build any resilience. It also doesn't make your view correct.
Yeah.
You know, that's like just because consensus achieved by censorship is not consensus.
That's true.
And I think like why I bring this up is that if we are so overtly sensitive and there's a chaos and we're trying to label it, we might try to label it as something it's not.
Yes. Well, that's what I see happening everywhere is that people are going energetically completely unregulated and emotionally unregulated. And then they're being fed these horrible, hostile, divisive stories. This side is right. And evil and
pro,
good.
This
dualistic, divisive. And all I keep posting is don't let them divide us. Don't let them divide us. That's what I keep screaming from the rooftops. Because in these unregulated, activated, facing all my shadows energy that the whole world is in right now, now being fed, it's like a perfect storm has evolved to, I don't know, I mean, clearly take us hopefully to a better place, but it's a rocky road right now. And so all of us need to learn to self-regulate and even to co-regulate. Because I even fall prey sometimes. I notice, you know, I get triggered and I'm like, make a comment on that, you know, and I'm like, nope, I pull myself back.
My snark factor has gone up a little bit.
Yeah, but that's normal.
You know, when I think about the other day, I was reading and came across a part that was about the infantilization of a child. The parentification of a child.
Yes, that was me. I was the parentified child.
Yeah. So for those listening, that's when the child is actually put into the parent role. This happens a lot with like addicts, narcissist parents, you know,
codependent parents.
Right.
Even.
Yeah. And like where, let's say we enmesh with a parent, a mom, a dad, we become best friends, their confidant, their therapist, their et cetera.
That was me.
Right. Yeah.
That's why I'm such a good therapist. Yeah. Hence,
me, I monetized my survival strategy too.
Yes.
But with that, how as adults, they become infantilized adults, right? Because they never actually had the experience of being parented.
Yeah.
And so I see then you insert how the government or media parentifies and infantilizes people. We don't believe you should be exposed to this information because you won't be able to handle it.
Yeah.
We are going to do this for your good.
Yeah.
And so there's this, it's matching the wound of the parentification
and
that happened.
I feel like they know that.
They fucking know. Are you kidding me? They're so good. They're they're playing in the quantum.
We think we're manipulative.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's like even being like, it's a conspiracy theory. No, it's not. It's just actually how it is. The conspiracy is that there's no manipulation.
Yeah, it's overt.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're now in this time where if the internet on some level represents global consciousness, right?
Oh, I hope not.
Well, on some level, because think of like we found each other through the internet.
Yes,
we're finding beautiful,
right?
The light, the shadow, which is true, like humanity or humans, or even if you think any animal, it's like there's a shadow side to it. And that needs to be healed in order for us to sort of, as you're saying, ascend to the next level.
Yeah.
And so individually, we all have to do this work with quantum love to be able to start to influence what is around us.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm so devoted to teaching it. And because it really, I mean, we're born this way, but it gets conditioned out of us with our wounding and our fear and our need to survive. But we come in these pure high frequency beings. And then part of the human journey, and if we're talking on a soul level, part of the soul's journey is to come here and forget the truth, right? And then reawaken.
And remember
who we really are. And that's what, you know, on an energetic level, quantum love teaches, because it is, you know, home frequency, right? Which is that coherence between your heart and your brain's electromagnetic field in a place of peace and love and ease energetically inside your body. That is really natural to us, but we don't live there a lot of the time. And as you learn to move your system intentionally into that place, it gets stickier and stickier. So you can do it without thought or without practice. And then you can start moving in the world and live in that and live from that. And then your whole reality starts to match that, not just your relationships, but everything.
How do you think, because I know we have similar thoughts on it, so I'm just curious yours. How do you think social media and the internet interacts with that?
Well, I think it tries to take us out of it. I mean, I'm biased. I don't want to totally derail the conversation, but it feels inauthentic not to say this. I don't know if you know this. I'm assuming you know that I lost my middle son, my 16-year-old, in 3 years ago to fentanyl poisoning. A drug dealer got in touch with him on Snapchat. So he was home, sheltering at home during the pandemic. And my deal with both the kid, my oldest was out of college and working, you know, in a different city, but my two youngest were still living at home in high school. And my deal with them, since they were completely isolated from everyone and everything, was you can be on social media as much as, because I thought the worst that would happen is like, we had all these conversations about, in terms of social media, about saying stupid things or naked pictures or things like right. That's what I was thinking about. So, I mean, we had a million conversations about drugs, but that's a different thing. But in terms of social media, I had no idea. I thought to get drugs, you had to know a drug dealer, find a drug dealer, know someone who knew a drug dealer.
That's how it used to work, I think.
I had no idea that the algorithm on Snapchat, because of the disappearing vanish thing, is a hotbed of drug dealers and sex slave people and predators. And the algorithm matches them with our kids and our kids with them. So you can, if you're looking for a drug dealer, hot second, you've got a whole selection, but the algorithm matches. And so basically this drug dealer found my kid, offered him a whole colorful menu of like one Percocet, $2, Valium, like all these different things delivered to your house, like a pizza. He was bored at home. I had no idea that was what was happening on social media.
I would have never thought.
He was bored at home. It was Super Bowl Sunday. This guy offered to bring him, you know, a drug for a few dollars. The only reason I know is because he was like titillated and took a screenshot and sent it to his friend. I'm going to order something to try. He was curious. I mean, good kids make dumb decisions. He's bored, stiff, isolated at home. He took it and it was laced with fentanyl. It only takes a few. They put fentanyl in 65% of the street drugs now. 300 people a day are dying from this. It just takes a few grains of sand of fentanyl to kill you if you aren't a fentanyl addict, like a normal right. person who doesn't take fentanyl. And he died on his bedroom floor. And so since then, I have been like, you know, there's nothing more powerful than an angry parent, you know? So
a fierce mother.
Yeah. So there are like 10,000 or I think 12,000 parents that my husband is the one that does most of the advocacy stuff, but we're pushing like there's a law that's officially a bill on the Senate. In the Senate right now called Sammy's Law, that simply requires that every social media platform that has children on it allows for safety software, which means that if the parent chooses to, it's not mandatory, they can put software on their kids' devices so that if sex, bullying, drugs are mentioned or discussed, you're pinged. So I would have been pinged when he got in touch with that drug dealer got in touch with him, and I would have immediately intervened and been like, what the hell's going on? And, you know, stopped it. But the Snapchat will not allow that on their platforms for totally mercenary reasons. They want to be able to collect and sell. Their main income comes from collecting and selling the data they collect on our kids. 85% of kids in this country are on Snapchat.
85%?
Yeah, it's the main place that
the
kids go.
The way they text and stuff, right?
Well, so that's what my kids' generation, your kid is going to be different, hopefully, because it's going to be a different world. But this is the first generation that has grown up on social media. Mm-hmm. And us parents, you know, had no idea. And while we weren't looking, it has become the fulcrum of their entire social life. So if you don't allow your kid on social media, they have no, you know, we used to go to the 7-Eleven or call our friends to find out what's happening on a Saturday night or where the fun is or who's doing what or who likes whom. It's all on social media now. So if you're not on social media, you might as well be in a bubble on a mountaintop somewhere. You are out of it. You have no clue. You're out of the social circle. You're out of the social alignment.
Yeah, I have a friend who was talking about that, who like, he didn't allow his son on social media. And then, you know, all the kids, I'm from Canada, so like the kids are all going to play hockey, all his friends, he doesn't get invited.
Right, exactly.
You know?
And so that's what starts to happen. So we didn't realize until it's too late, and now their entire social life is on there. So to tell a tweenager or teenager they can't be on is really isolating them. But, and so the social media, so really all the social media, but Snapchat in particular is the most evil of them all. And they collect the data, sell it to advertisers, and for the safety software to work, it has to allow the data to run through and come right back. The safety software companies and the law clearly states they can't hold the data or keep the data or, God forbid, sell the data. But Snapchat is so protective of their money that they make from that, they don't even want it running through something
even
external.
Even if that means saving lives.
Oh, they don't care about saving
lives.
They
don't care. I mean, that's true of Instagram and
Meta. None of them care. And the second reason they don't do it is because they know that if they allow it, the kids may not stay on it as much. Because the reason they stay on it is because everything disappears and there's no way there is zero way a parent can monitor their child's social media behavior while they're on it. You can't without safety software. And so you have two options. You let them on there and it doesn't matter how many conversations you have with them. They're going to be exposed to drugs. They're going to be exposed to inappropriate content. They're going to be exposed to bullying. It's like the dark web on there with really nefarious things you don't want your kids to be exposed to. Or you can isolate them. So like if I had it to do over and my kid was your age and hopefully by the time he becomes a teenager, the law will actually, I mean, I think it's going to happen. If not our law, some law will happen. It's because people are waking up to this, just starting to wake up to it. But if I could go back, and I've obviously thought often about what I would do differently, I would take my kids and go to some community and or wherever I lived, find 100 different parents who are in our orbit at school, at after school stuff, at clubs, at sports, and get everybody at like age 5 or however to sign on to creating a community that is off social.
Yeah, I
love
that.
If you try to do it with a few families, your kid's going to end up not being friends with those kids, and then they want to be friends with the kids that are on social media, right? And if you tell your kid they can't go on social media, they're going on at school and at their friend's house anyway. And they all have secret accounts and everything else. So it doesn't matter. You have to have a whole community of kids that are off social.
So there's not the social pressure, the exposure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, like being from a generation like you that knows the world before the internet, before smartphones.
Yeah.
You know, I've really longed for that. Like I was just in Peru a month and a bit ago.
Yeah.
And I spent a week off social media and I was like,
heaven.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
And I really feel sad for that. I mean, maybe every previous generation feels this way about the one
to an extent, but this is severe. I mean, we are seeing a huge rise in ADHD. Kids are, if you can watch, they're starting to show the longitudinal studies of the changes in behavior.
The behavioral stuff.
It is designed to addict them and to addict all of us, but their brains are much more sensitive than ours.
Yeah.
You know, they're much more plastic. They're developing the synaptic routes are being built and it's
with
feeding
technology,
yes.
Which a lot of that is that argument of like the singularity where we become technology at some point.
Yes.
And I was thinking like, oh yeah, you know, at some point a group of humans are going to return to the earth and the other group is going to upload their shit to the cloud.
Yeah.
And I already know what group I'm in.
Me too.
But you know, and thank you so much for sharing the story of your son, Sam.
Sammy. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And I'm because you've turned it into this like mission, and I'm so sorry for the source of the mission.
Yeah.
And what was that like to, if you're open to sharing?
I'm open to sharing anything.
To be in the thoughts of quantum and vibration and being in grief, like how.
It was the biggest blessing that I ever, I mean, I thank God, angels, everything that I had discovered quantum love and been living in it by the time he left, because like my husband, for instance, doesn't, you know, he's my nickname for him is Senor Root Chakra. Like he's the most pragmatic dude on
Senor
the planet.
Root Chakra.
Yeah.
I had to do the math on that.
Yeah. Like, oh, he's just so pragmatic. He's so, you know, what you can see and measure, science guy, whatever. And, you know, he doesn't begrudge me my reality, and he entrains to me whether he wants to or not. But and so it's been for him, when you die, you cease to exist. You are gone and in the ground.
So he doesn't share like a spiritual perspective
no,
on that.
No, not on that. But and what he does, and the way that he, and this has really been interesting for me as a couples therapist, because I've really had to live, well, most of my marriage I've had to live what I preach. But in this case, you know, one of the keys to surviving, because most couples don't survive
the passing of a child, right?
Is everybody has to grieve however the hell they need to grieve. And in the beginning, I started to be like, he needs to feel it and he needs to allow himself to process it. And then I suddenly was like, what the hell am I doing? Leave the man alone. And so he has channeled all of his grief into the advocacy. He's going to Washington. He's meeting with lawmakers. He's creating coalitions. He's on the news 3 times a week. I mean, he is like a rock star.
Wow, he's like really alchemized
this. He is alchemized it. Yeah. I went in another alchemy direction, which is, so first of all, thank God I know that energy can't be created or destroyed. Like, I know that in every cell of my body can only change form. The energy of which we're made has been here since the beginning of time. And so when we die, our bodies are gone. That's the form, but the energy never dies, and we can stay in connection with the energy. And I very quickly have done that. I mean, it's been evolving, but there's so many things that happened after he died. All of these crazy metaphysical things, but one in particular was, I was sitting on the beach. It was only a few days after he left, and I was sitting on the beach just trying to breathe. And I see things and know things, and feel things, clairsentient, clairvoyant. And what's the other one? See things, feel things, and know things. I can't remember anyway, but I would do that, but I'd never been clairaudient, where you hear voices or hear messages or whatever. Some people are, never was. But all of a sudden I hear this very clear voice saying to me, do you want to live or die? And I immediately knew, I get chills still talking about it. I immediately knew what it was asking, because I had discovered that when I had breast cancer. I knew that the reason I had breast cancer, the cancer developed, was because I hadn't properly processed the loss. And so my body was holding it, and it turned into inflammation. We all have cancer cells in our bodies. It's inflammation that causes them to grow into cancer. And so I knew already that it was grief. And I have yet to meet a woman with breast cancer who doesn't have unresolved grief and overgive to the world and undergive to herself. It's universal. So I knew the essence of that question, but what I was astounded by was my body's reaction and my brain's reaction, which was immediately to be like, not only I want to live, but like suddenly this physical sense, it's hard to describe in words, but this physical visceral awareness of what an insane, indescribable gift it is to even be in this body. And all of a sudden, like a life review, all of a sudden I saw like the miracle that sperm got together with that egg and lived in my mother's body for 9 months and survived. And that I am now, that I am like, get to be here in this body. Like, it still makes me shit. Like, it's that any of us are here is such a gift.
It's bananas.
And so I just like really immediately got that. And I was like, I want to live. And then the voice said, well, then you need to leave. It's just so bizarre. You need to leave and go somewhere completely alone and go all the way into your pain, which was the last thing I wanted to do. But I knew what that meant. And so 1440 Multiversity had, because I had done some events there, had reached out to me when they heard what happened to Sammy and said, hey, we're closed for COVID, but if you want to just come cocoon here, we'll open one of the faculty houses. They were amazing. So I just called. I went to my poor husband 4 days after his son dies. And I said, I need to leave for a week and go into the woods and wail my pain into the woods or I'm going to die. That's what I said to Senor Root Chakra.
Senor Root Chakra.
And he, God bless him, he was like, maybe he was just too in shock, but he was like, okay. And he took care of our youngest, who was reeling. He had, was the first to find his brother, and he's only 14 months younger. And I mean, I made sure they had support, but yeah. I went, and my, one of my closest friends, who's amazing at holding that kind of intensity, was my grief concierge. And all of my healer friends were Zooming in. A few of them that lived nearby came. I get to 1440. They had filled the house with delicious food, the faculty house they gave me.
Wow.
They had put up a picture of me and Sammy, all these blankets.
Wow.
I mean, it was just
so
like a
beautiful.
Cocoon.
Yeah.
And I spent a week there going all scared shitless, but going all the way into my pain, which I'd never done before.
Was the grief from your mother's passing present in that too?
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it. But I every day I was doing somatic experiencing, breath work, grief yoga, forest bathing, body work.
It's in the redwoods, right?
In the redwoods. I was on the mother tree for hours every day, crying onto her. And it was the most, you know, within 6 months, I was aware. And certainly now, looking back 3 years out, it's completely saved my life. But it was such like supercharged learning, because what I discovered and it really started me on the journey of trying to be a light or a shepherd of this portal that grief, leading people through the, it's, grief is a portal.
Mm-hmm.
It burns away everything that doesn't serve, and it alchemizes you into this pure self-actualized version of yourself, if you're courageous enough to go into the frickin' portal. And it is scary as shit to go into the portal. But I did it. And what I discovered is that all you need is to take that first step. The first day when I was doing the somatic experiencing and I went all the way into the pain, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm going to go into the pain. And I don't know if I'll ever come out, which is what most of us think. I quickly realized that what I'd always been told, that it takes 10 to 15 minutes to move emotions, and then the pressure valve releases and you feel clearer and lighter. And then I started realizing that when I did that, my frequency rose, because I know what that feels like in my body. And then he started reaching me, because because we're pure energy and our bodies are much lower frequency than when we're not in our bodies. And every medium and person who talks to dead people has told me this and confirmed this, that they're vibrating so high, they can't reach us at our lowest lows. But when we can authentically raise our frequency, they can meet us in the middle. And so that's when I started having all this communion with him. So then I started doing it more, and then it served more. And I started releasing the emotions and using somatic experiencing and ecstatic dance and meditation and EMDR and all these different modalities. And then I started teaching other mamas, and then
who had lost children.
And now I have monthly grieving mama meetups where we always have a visiting healer and we process. And then,
wow.
And on April, just a few days from now, April 3rd through the 7th, I am having my first, I'm fulfilling the promise I made 3 years ago when I left the Redwoods. I told the mother tree, I'm coming back with a group of mamas and taking them through this process.
Wow.
And on April 3rd, so just a few days from now, I'm taking my first group of mamas to 1440 Multiversity with all the healers that have helped me. And we're taking them through the process of what saved my life to get them on the path of healing.
Okay, so first, if someone's listening and they're like, damn, that's in 3 days,
yes,
or 2 days, do you have like a place they can sign up for a wait list?
Yeah, 1440.org.
And there's a
it's space right there on the homepage.
For the next one to be released?
Yes. Okay, and great. Also, you know, I'm trying to take as many there, you know, they sort of have space. It's not complete, you know, because they're only having two retreats, our retreat and another aligned retreat that's a little bit smaller. So I am wanting and planning on taking people up until the last minute.
Yeah, that's
so
amazing.
If you can make it in 3 days,
okay,
come.
There's not like a limit to space.
No.
Okay, amazing. That process of going into grief, so my wife and I were together for 5 years and then broke up and then got back together. And in the breaking up, I met a grief that, I mean, I was sober.
Yeah, huge.
I was sober. The first time I'd gone through a breakup, like with nothing to leave.
To numb.
Right. And I was discovering so much of the love, like that it was actually love. And I've been so afraid of it before.
Mm-hmm.
But then I just started to see that there was so much of, like, I got emotional thinking about it because there was so much of, like, in my fear of not going towards it, I'd missed so much.
Yeah.
You know, so you know that paradox when you start to feel the depth of, because we think grief is like low vibration.
No.
Because we think fear, depression, anxiety, right?
That's unexpressed grief.
Right. Exactly. Right. Like the, when you don't express core emotions, it presents as a secondary emotion, anxiety or guilt or shame. And I started to just feel how actually grief was ascension.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Which is such a paradox.
I know. Like that blew my mind, too.
Yeah. Like the descent into darkness, grief is actually ascent.
Yes.
Which is such a wild paradox.
It's wild.
Because then I started to see like, oh, this is all just evidence that I love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, this
That's
isn't something to be.
Is.
I shouldn't be embarrassed or like this idea that, you know, we no longer have a relationship. I have this grief. Now, if I don't get her or a relationship, then this love no longer exists. It's like, no, this is it. This
love
is
love lives forever.
Yeah. And I remember I wrote from that. I wrote that love, whenever you love someone, you're equally like experiencing the loss of them because you're actually saying yes to what it will feel like when you either pass or they pass, right? That there's, because you're even experiencing their grief.
Yeah. Well, the only way, this is what I say to people all the time. Similarly, the only way you can really experience love in the way you're longing to experience it is if you're willing to get your heart broken.
Yes.
That is the only way.
You have to. It's a non-negotiable price of admission.
Yes. And it's the same thing for parenthood. When you meet your child, you're like, I have never loved anything this but and holy shit, something can happen to them.
Oh, man, I said goodbye to him coming here to L.A. And it was one of the first times that I really felt this, like, I'm going to miss you so much.
Yeah.
Like your little hi,
I know,
like his little smile, his little screams, you know, all of it. And I'm really seeing that, like, it's just this. The level of love that is available to all of us, but also recognizing that through that alignment, that quantum love strategy, the techniques, the tools, the being, there's not a scarcity to it.
No, no. And even him not being here, you know, I just recently had the three-year anniversary and I was thinking about it and writing about it. And I was like, you know, I so miss his physical form, just like his little man hands, his squishy man hands and the smell of him. I have some of his, you know, his bathrobe and a little toy, you know, a stuffed animal he's had since he was a baby that he still slept with secretly in Ziploc bags so that they hold his smell. And once in
That's
a while,
beautiful.
I open it up and smell, you know, I miss his physical form so much. But what has been so profound for me, and it's an evolution, I am now learning to have a two-way relationship with him, not as me with my 16-year-old son, because he's not that anymore. He's this ancient, brilliant soul that he always was, but came into this just like we all do. We're all these beautiful souls of different ages and stages and old soul, new soul, whatever. But he's an ancient old one. I've always known that. And I can now tap in and tune into him, which is so bizarre because he's a gajillion times wiser. Like he's part of it, right? And he's like this, I can't even explain it, like this sage, brilliant entity that is now teaching me.
Yeah, that guiding you.
Mm-hmm.
That's so beautiful.
But it took a while to like transition that relationship. For
yeah,
me, I don't think it took any time for him. He's just been waiting for me.
He's like, you need to go to the woods. You need to go to the woods. Do you want to live or die?
Yeah, you probably.
Okay. Well, and then to think of what we then create from that, which is not the minimization, obviously, of the experience and the loss. But then now that what you've created from it that will actually allow other mothers, parents, and what your husband is fighting for
Yeah. It's like we've gone in the, I'm all about the healing and normalizing grief because nobody has any idea how, like that shocked me too. Nobody has any idea how to grieve. And I can see the whole trajectory that everything that happened in my life leading up to that prepared me for that.
Yeah.
Or I wouldn't have known how to do it either.
Right.
Despite helping a million people in grief as a therapist, it's totally different once you've gone through it.
Well, now it's so embodied.
Yeah.
It's and like so you're walking it.
That's where my heart is pulled and my husband's is in the activism. And we just kind of divide and conquer.
Yeah. And, you know, allowing that pull of where, like, the universe pulled you to quantum love, mm-hmm. pulled you to quantum sex. We're speaking of.
Oh, yeah. We didn't get into quantum sex
yet. We should finish with quantum sex because, yeah. you know, might as well go through that whole ride and that's finish with an orgasm.
Yeah, that's everybody's favorite
too many
chapter.
Puns. Too many puns.
When I worked the big finish.
When I worked as a pharmaceutical rep, I had a friend who sold erectile dysfunction drugs.
Yep.
And they had to take sensitivity training.
Yes.
Because the target market was like older men, which were doctors. So there's like just too many jokes. Like you just want to make jokes all day, which I wasn't that rep, so I could make jokes all day about it. Okay, so you brought...
Well, I just brought you a few little prezzies. That so quantum sex is a chat. It's I'm actually now writing quantum
Here's
sex.
A book.
Yeah, that's
quantum sex will
well,
be.
That's a chapter in quantum. So quantum sex is a chapter in quantum love.
But now it gets its own book.
Now it's getting its own book.
Damn.
Because people love that stuff. And I love it.
Okay, so tell us about quantum sex.
So quantum sex is basically in its simplest form. Instead of an orgasm or arousal being localized to your genitals, you can have it through your whole body. It makes sex an energetic, profoundly arousing physical and even spiritual experience if you want it to be. And the reason that I finally got it is for my whole career, the most common question I would get was, especially from people in longer term relationships, how do you spice it up? How do you keep it interesting? Right. And I could give them 365 tips, tools, toys, role plays. I'm happy to do that. I've written 8 books with all of those. And within a year or maybe longer, if they did some of them twice, they'd be back to me asking for more because the novelty would be gone. They can. And I finally, at one point was like, what is it about novelty that, and I realized it's intensity of experience we're looking for. And so in a new relationship, when the dopamine centers of the brain are firing and everything is brand new, that intensity is natural. But once you get to know each other and the familiarity kicks in and you move into the attachment stage of your relationship, the novelty isn't there. So that's, and what I'm seeing culturally, especially with social media, is that people are just like, in order to seek that intensity, they're bringing a third person into the relationship. They're going outside the relationship. They're going, you know, they're kind of staying on the surface. And what quantum sex teaches you to do is go deeper and go into your body's energy and start pulling the sensations up from your genitals and circling it around between the two of you and being aware of the energy that you're bringing into a sexual experience and the energy you're taking in. So you're holding in your hand, for instance, my sexual healing kit. Well, you have to open it, show it. The main thing, the main
ingredient. Let me open the box. God, it's too many.
There are bath salts and a Palo Santo stick and a candle. But the most important ingredient and a meditation, that's important.
Shakti, divine feminine. What is this?
That is a white lotus. It smells amazing. A white lotus candle. So I have them light a candle, do the bath salts. You say a whole kind of meditation. I guide you through it. And the intention is to... Because especially for women, we take in energy. So if you've been in a toxic relationship or a painful relationship, that energy remains. So that's why that rose quartz wand is so important. Because
this is an antenna.
Rose quartz absorbs energy.
So you you place this up.
Up inside.
And do you put it all the way in?
As much as you want.
Or is this like a toy too?
It can be a toy, but it's, and some people use it as a toy, but because rose quartz is so absorbent energetically, it takes on it and absorbs all the energy of past partners.
What do guys do? Do we like soak our dong and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you don't take on as much
internally. We're the giving.
You're the givers, but you do. I mean, I have had a bunch of guys.
This is
about plug. If you are on the receiving end. Yes. If you are on the receiving end.
Oh, yeah.
Then you may want to use it in your tush.
So if you've had someone inside you,
yes,
then this is good.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure. I developed this for some of my clients who were really struggling with this feeling. You know, once we got into the energy and we were working and doing guided meditations, they were really struggling with the hangover. I call it like this energetic hangover. And so just experimenting, I gave a few women this system and they were blown. It like totally worked.
That's so great. I mean, look, whenever I was in Vegas, well, my wife and I gave birth. She gave birth. I was there to Jasper in Vegas, where my wife's from.
Yeah.
And we've spent quite a bit of time in Vegas in the last 4 years. And one thing that I noticed about Vegas, because before I met my wife, I went to Vegas on a bachelor party, which is a very different experience.
Very different
of Vegas
than having a baby there.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people making babies in Vegas. Yeah. I didn't know they raised them or had them.
Me either.
But yeah, what I noticed now, because I went there, basically my shadow got on a plane when I was on a bachelor party and I had a great time. And now when I look, when I'm there and I'm like down on the strip going for dinner or something, I'm like, wow, it's so fascinating to watch how people's unresolved, unlived.
Yeah, I can't even go there.
It's not judgment, but it's also like, oh, I've done that. Like, it's not a judgment because I recognize who I was and where I was when I was into more casual encounters.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't treating myself as sacred. I was I wanted to control depth of intimacy.
Yeah.
I got affirmation and I felt loved even though it was fleeting.
Yeah.
And I got arousal to treat the feeling of being out of alignment with my own integrity. And so I think of like this type of intentional practice.
Yes.
That is like having grace, forgiveness, but sacred reverence for the womb.
Yeah.
But for what's the like spiritual term for the ding dong, for the penis?
The lingam.
That's right, the lingam. But that is actually like, has an origin.
It's a Sanskrit word.
That's right, I was going to
say. And yoni is the female.
Yoni, that's right. I remember when I first heard that, I was like, oh God, here we go. Am I in Sedona right now? You know?
But the cool thing about quantum sex, you can have it casually. It's so much better when you have a heart-to-heart connection. But you start to learn, whoa, earthquake. That's an earthquake.
No fucking way, really?
Yeah.
That was a small tremor.
It's still going.
It's still going.
Whoa.
It's the quantum sex thing.
Yeah. Literally. We made the earth shake.
Holy crap.
That was crazy.
The womb was like, woo!
Holy
man. Well, there may be an aftershock, but let's see.
Welcome to LA. Wild. You know, one time in LA, I was sleeping and I woke up thinking someone was shaking me and it was an earthquake. It freaked me. I feel like there's still a little bit, right?
I think it is.
Yeah, it is. It's like very subtle. I love that we just quantum a tectonic plate. I think this invitation to move to the quantum, it's if someone's resistant to it, at least my position on that is follow the resistance.
Yeah. Or just be curious. Follow the resistance
just
if you're willing,
it.
But just be curious.
You can't lose by all of a sudden wanting to think and feel better and then influence other people around you. Like it's only going to be a win.
Yeah, it's only a win. It really is. And there are all kinds of techniques that are in the book and everywhere else where you can learn to shift into these, you know, when you're in a place of despair or stuckness or whatever, how you can shift so that you can access those higher frequencies.
So you can use quantum sex as an individual.
Yes.
To also practice this embodiment of quantum
and
love.
And talk about manifesting. We haven't even gotten into sex magic, which I only touch on in this chapter, but is going to have its own chapter in the book on quantum sex, is that sexual energy, especially orgasm, is the highest frequency your body can hold.
That makes sense. I remember reading a quote that said, if you don't believe in God, have an orgasm.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the highest frequency our body can hold is what David Hawkins would call bliss, right?
Yeah.
And we don't stay there long unless you're on a mountaintop somewhere.
Yeah.
But orgasm is literally your body in the highest frequency. So if you create an intention and you can concentrate enough to hold that intention or even just hold it right after orgasm when you're still in the afterglow, it is supercharging that intention into the
creation.
Quantum field. Because remember what I said, your energetic frequency has to match what you're trying to manifest.
That's so good. Okay, I'm curious before...
Before we end. Well, that's just a toy because, you know, it'll be fun for you. And
for those of you who can't see, you could probably hear the microphone is being gently pleasured by...
So what I love about this, this is one of my toys. I have a line of sexual aids and devices that you can get anywhere, Amazon, wherever, but on my website too. But anywhere, they sell sex toys. And what I love teaching people quantum sex using a little vibrator, because what you do is you start with the feelings of genital arousal and you start learning to pull them
to
up
move them.
And then to move them and then to circle them between you and to go out the top of your head like a mind-blowing orgasm.
I've experienced that. It's fucked.
Yes.
Because your body isn't necessarily experiencing like ejaculation.
No.
But you're like, holy, I'm in a whole different...
And you can do it with ejaculation, yeah. But it's literally the definition of mind-blowing, or it comes out the top of your head.
It's like your third eye is exploding.
Yeah, it's amazing. So when I teach, I found that... So originally I developed this as just a sexual aid to help women have orgasms during intercourse. Are you feeling the shaking again? I'm feeling a little shake.
A little bit.
And it's not just because we're vibrating, but using the vibrator, it actually creates that feeling of vibration, and it's easier
to like practice. Tap.
And I always tell people to practice on your own first.
What about dudes? Like, do I just
you can put use that on your perineum?
Yeah.
Or yeah.
Or
stick it in a little.
You
bit.
Could as long as the crystal's not in there. Yeah. You can put get this around there. Would you do this around like the anus?
Yes, but obviously, you know, you never want to go to anus to vagina.
Yeah.
But
if you don't know back to front by now.
Yeah. So each of you use your own. If you're if you've got a butt and a vulva.
If you've got a butt and a vulva.
Go and use different toys or wash them off in between.
Well, I'm super excited to talk another time about quantum sex. You know, we were in each other's orbit. And now we're in each other's literal orbit.
Yeah.
And I think we just became best friends.
We did.
Seriously, I've so enjoyed this conversation. I really love being around you. I know you quantumed me.
I trained you.
Yeah, we caused an earthquake.
We did.
This is the best. Yeah. I so appreciate it. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing all of your knowledge, all of the experiences you've had in your life. Thank you for trusting us with the information about your son as well.
And
just really honoring Sammy's passing and his life.
It was a beautiful conversation. It was really wonderful. Thank you for having me.
And we'll also have to hit social media and its abusive dynamics in another one.
We will. Anytime.
Sweet.
Don't get me started.
Oh, I will. Thanks, Dr. Lee.